If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
My friends, the great experiment.
Love is the answer.
Hidden.
Trick, trick.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick, trick.
You people, you're all astronauts on some kind of Star Trek.
Trick, trick.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new, very short Star Trek podcast from the very short members of the Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
You're commenting on the length of our members in our show open? That's great.
Yeah.
I'm Adam Pranica. I'll have no comments about my member at this time.
I'm getting a lot of questions about my member that are answered by my t-shirt about my member. Back with more very short treks. Very excited. We're in the back half, the last three of them.
Yeah. You got to end strong if you're very short treks, right? And after that kind of beginning, my expectations are really high.
Yeah. I can't wait to get into it and talk about these a little bit more. Do you want to just jump right in? Cut a short marin?
Let's do it, Ben. With the first of the last three of these very short treks, once again, you can find these on YouTube, on the Star Trek YouTube profile. This one's called Worst Contact. It's directed by Aaron Hawkins and written by Casper Kelly.
You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown.
You forgot you had the sauce!
I mean, they did some gross out stuff in the previous episode, the holiday one, but Worst Contact might be the grossest thing that the Star Trek industrial complex has ever put out.
You thought Holiday Party was gross? I guess the half bob could be considered gross.
If you dance.
Hey, this is just me, Adam. But
you think diarrhea in a uniform is gross?
I think mass death is gross, personally. That's just me.
Doesn't really move my needle.
That's just a position I take
on
that kind of thing.
It's about time you took a stand on that.
Mm-hmm. People have been asking. So this is set in the TNG era, and hey, was I a little bit disappointed that it wasn't the D being animated flying around in the Star Trek logo at the beginning? Yes. Was I happy to see the D in orbit of this planet? Also, yes.
You know what that decision makes me think is that your idea that it might have been a hand-drawn recreation of the open might be accurate, and it might have just been too much work to recreate it for multiple ships.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're lucky they spent the resources to do any of this stuff, so.
Yeah.
I mean, what would we even be talking about right now, Adam?
It's exciting to have a TNG version of this format, and it's neat to see the art style for the D. It's cool to see the art style of Riker and Dr. Beverly. That's great. They they beam down with a third random to do first contact with an alien that just got their warp drive to work. And these aliens have big old heads. They wear sandals to work. And their science room, their science lab, is covered in boogers.
We believe boogers represent our essence and bind us to all things.
One of the things I love about this, though, is that you don't know what that is. It just looks like the background initially.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them like reaches out to shake Riker's hand upon learning that there is life in the universe. And he he gets a booger on his finger before he does it.
Is something wrong?
Well,
And you realize at this moment, when another one like wipes a booger on something, that these guys are fucking gross as hell and they wipe their boogers everywhere. And that's what the pattern is in this room. It's on everything. It's on their instruments. It's on the walls. It's on the floors. I guess it's not on their freshly created warp core yet, but it's only a matter of time, right?
I really like the whole point of this. And this is something that I think Lower Decks did really well with the Duplers, is make it clear that, like, not all first contacts, not all contacts at all are positive experiences. Sometimes they're awkward. Sometimes the aliens you're working with are annoying or disgusting. And that's the case here. These aliens, I don't think, get a name. But their walls are covered in boogers. Their hands are unwashed.
Ugh.
They're enthusiastic leftover fish microwavers.
We must celebrate with our national dish.
Oh, and the reality TV. Ugh. Come on.
Hey, wait a second. Are these guys me?
I don't believe that you microwave your leftover fish at the workplace, but I don't know.
How else am I going to reheat it?
Do you have a microwave in your studio?
No, just in the house.
Do you have a mini fridge in your studio?
I don't. I have a mini fridge that we recently liberated from the garage of my in-laws because I guess it was my wife's when she was in college, and then it was her little brother's when he was in college, and then has been sitting fallow in their garage ever since. And so I have no idea if it even works. It's just, it's now sitting in my garage doing nothing as it once was in their garage doing nothing.
Is it still taped shut with a label that says do not open?
I was tempted to plug it in. We had like a backyard party for my baby's first birthday a while back. And I thought that it might be a good, like kind of a funny alt to having a cooler full of beers out there is just to plug a fridge in outside.
Mini fridge always seems like a good idea.
Yeah. I should do it. It's so ugly. It's like, it's white plastic and the plastic has gone all yellow. And I was like, this is going to mess up the aesthetics. A cooler on a back patio looks great. A yellowed plastic fridge is not going to look great.
That's the thing that the Smeg company did really well, right? Like, really nice-looking refrigerator.
Speaking of Smeg, I'm sure these guys also don't wash their foreskins on their dicks, and these aliens are disgusting, and...
Ugh!
When,
Jesus, Ben!
Did I outgross the episode?
That was the grossest thing.
I couldn't believe that there was a brand called Smeg, and it was a food preservation brand.
Oh, they also sell toasters.
You think this is Ensign Hazmat that beamed down with Riker and Beverly?
I kept waiting for them because there's that moment where Dr. Beverly and Riker are kind of whispering to each other about, like, they're kind of like daring each other to go through with this first contact.
Right.
I thought for sure the third guy was going to be the victim. Like, Riker's not going to shake hands.
No way.
But the third guy will.
Yeah, yeah. Ensign Hazmat, you do it.
They all but ignore this guy.
He has no lines. All he does is react. He's there to do face acting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a real quandary. Like, how do we respect the customs? And, like,
are some customs not respectable, though? This is the question that I had when I was watching this scene. Because, like, they are so grossed out by this, understandably. But, like, what is a custom versus what is just poor hygiene?
I mean, that's a great question. Famously, like, in the Temple of Doom, there's the lady that's going around with Indiana Jones, and they get fed gross food by the local, you know, populace of whatever part of India.
Is this the monkey brain scene?
Yeah, but also like that when they're in the poor village, they get offered food and she thinks that's gross too. And it, like, it's a scene that like ages horribly. I mean, I think it's a scene that's meant to make her look like an asshole, but it also just makes it look like she doesn't eat the food of like any foreigners, basically. And that's sort of the quandary that Riker and Beverly are in, but it's like so much further over the line than just food I'm not used to. It's like, it's stuff that we are like trained from a young age to treat as taboo and revolting.
Well, I mean, very specifically, there is a scene of food doctoring where snot is used as a sauce for this microwaved fish.
That guy can really shoot a rocket, too, because it, like, coils up like a poop emoji on the fish.
Yeah.
Blech.
Yeah. Can't be blamed for not wanting to eat this customary meal.
You're seasoning your fish with a snot rocket? What the hell is the food safety department on this planet even doing? You're gonna get shut down!
I got the good people of United Handkerchief to give your entire staff snot rags so that this kind of thing is never gonna happen again.
Alien boogers contain a high quantity of salt, lending umami and richness to the fish flavor. However, they also contain alien pathogens that the human immune system may not be used to. That's why health departments all over the country ban the use of alien snot as a fish accompaniment.
Shut it down!
When was the last time you remember, like, you sit down to a meal with, like, a friend's family cooking it, or, like, a stranger, and you were like, I can't do this. Like, either the cooks are bad. I'm not talking about in a restaurant. I'm talking about, like, someone provided a meal for you. It did not agree with you on some level. Like, that's such an acute awkwardness.
Yeah.
Like, that hasn't happened to me very often.
It was, like, a thing going over to friends' houses when I was a kid, I think, a lot more than it is now.
Do you think that stopped happening as an adult because of bad experiences as a kid?
Maybe. I think also maybe now people that can't cook know they can't cook and don't try.
Yeah, people are far more willing to order takeout for a guests over for dinner situation than I think ever would have happened when we were little.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's a part of it. I mean, Lord knows I have been over a friend's house to eat and the food just ain't no good. I mean, the peas are soggy, the bread's stale, and the chicken tastes like wood.
Mm-hmm. That'll happen to anyone. So Riker shoots the warp drive.
Yeah.
Just moments after it's activated.
Rocketing them back into the pre-warpness of their civilization.
That was their only one.
That's all it takes.
Anyway, ping us when you have another one.
Better yet, we'll call you.
Hey, when it comes to inventing warp drives, one is none. Cauliflower head aliens.
I wonder if that's part of the thinking for First Contact. Is you should probably wait for the second one to come online, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
One could be a fluke.
You got to treat it that way. Man, do you think that when they materialize on the transporter pad back up on the D, they just like disrobe immediately and throw everything in the furnace?
Cast it into the fire!
Yeah, I really think they do. I would not feel clean after this for a very long time.
Take a Silkwood sonic shower.
Yeah, turn it up all the way.
Oof.
You like this episode, Ben?
The greatest trick.
I did like this episode. I laughed and laughed at how revolting it was, and I really salute Frakes and Gates McFadden for being good sports about doing something as nasty as this one.
Yeah, especially because, you know, their work in Picard was so straight and serious. Like,
yeah.
Their willingness to do something funny and weird, I think, is admirable and cool. And I think it says a lot about them in a positive way.
Totally.
This is also the first very short treks that made fun of the aliens instead of the crew people, like centering them as the butt of the joke. Because I think the first episode definitely makes the Pete Holmes character the location for the joke. And the second one definitely makes Spock the boob. But this one most definitely makes the aliens the bad guys there. And I thought that was an interesting choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun one. Should we do Larkins like as we go through these, or do you want to save them all for the end?
Oh, did you find yourself an Edward Larkin for this one?
I think I'm going to give it to Ensign Hazmat, who I'm assuming that third person that beams down with them is. I feel like watching this through the second time, I was just really drawn to the way they animated that character, like realizing that he's been like touching the hand railing surrounding the warp core and like, you know, drawing it back like, oh, God, oh, no. And like, he's just there for looks of realization and horror. And yeah. He really made me laugh as a guy. So he's my Edward Larkin.
Yeah, he's Ensign React for sure. I'm just going to make it this alien species for me. The sandals are such a minor thing, but they just say so much in a moment like this. Like these are scientists wearing sandals to the lab.
Yeah.
I think that's great as a choice.
Well, why don't we move on to the next one? What do you say?
Ben, this one's called Holograms All the Way Down, and it was written by friend of DeSoto, Aaron Waltke. Would you look
at that? Yeah. Real fun that they threw him one of these writing assignments. We start with the NX-01 Enterprise from Star Trek Enterprise in space. And Trip Tucker doing a voice.
Is that who that is?
That's the
I don't know these people.
That's the Connor Trinneer character.
Uh-huh. It's under attack, but before the battle goes very far, Riker and Troy walk into frame and freeze the program.
Which, spoiler alert, is a bit about a thing that actually happens in Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah, even I'm aware of this. This was the much maligned ending of the series.
But I think it'll be smooth sailing from here on out.
The drawing of Riker in profile really tripped me out.
How's that?
I don't know why. He just looked so strange to me compared to the... I mean, like, it reads as Frakes in all but this profile for me. I don't know. I'm not quite sure they nailed it there.
I think that's an interesting observation because, like, as an exercise, to draw modern characters in the animated series way would mean that you're trying to do good but not great, right? Because that's all the animated series was originally. So, like, when I think of that moment you're describing, I'm like, well, yeah, we've got extremely talented artists doing this, but they're being told, don't do the best you can. Like, try to do the version of it instead of, like, being photorealistic or whatever in terms of your animation. And that's such an interesting bit of direction, isn't it?
It's work in the style of, and that's something that they achieve really well, I think. But also in this episode in particular, it's interesting because they're trying to work in the style of, but sell like what happens in TNG or Deep Space Nine when the background of the holodeck disappears, because this happens over and over again. And that, like, this part was shot against a green screen and the holodeck environment is a plate that they're replacing, you know, from scene to scene. Like, the Star Trek, the animated series art style doesn't have a lot of tools in its toolbox for selling a green screen effect as a thing that's happening, you know?
There are 10 layers to this. It's sort of like that scene in Star Trek First Contact where we just pull back and back and back and back.
Yeah.
Because we pull out of these programs over and over and over again. And we meet a ton of people along the way, and that makes it fun.
Yeah. The second one is Quark and Garrick talking about this being propaganda.
Root beer floaties.
It's going to be used to bring Romulans into the Dominion War.
It's pretty great, like, the depiction of Quark looking the way he does, because there's a finite amount of colors to Star Trek, the animated series. So it's not like you can use gradient for his eyes. Like, you have to use purple or whatever they use here instead of a darker shade, because that's one of the colors you get to use on the animated series. And it works, right? I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah, it was cool. So this one freeze frames to Lower Decks, and this is the one moment where the art style is basically exactly the same as it is in its native environment.
Yeah, what do you think of that choice? Because when we see the Prodigy folks and we see the Lower Deckers, they're in their original art style.
Yeah. Well, like the Prodigy folks almost to me looked like these were illustrations from something about Prodigy, and they didn't have to move that much, so they didn't have to, like, you know, I don't think that they had a walk cycle or anything. It was just like blinking eyes and commentary.
Yeah, like they're from the comic book or something.
Yeah. And also, you know, in Lower Decks, the couple of times they've like referenced things from the animated series, they've like shown on screen like original animated series artwork and artwork in that style. So I guess it's sort of in keeping with a Lower Decks theme that these two things are intercompatible.
Yeah. We freeze program with Sulu from the animated series original. We freeze program from Saru and from Hemmer and from Neelix. Until finally there's a freeze program from a gross combination of Riker, Trip Tucker, T'Pol, Spock, and Uhura. A monstrous character wearing one bulging uniform.
Yeah. The tailoring on that, just mind-blowing. To have a shirt that has to accommodate four boobs across five chests.
Yeah. And we're left to consider whether or not this is the computer that has done this the entire time.
Yeah.
Computer, freeze program.
You are the computer. Who are you talking about?
Was it the computer?
Was it a good short episode, Ben?
And you people, you're all astronauts. Some kind of Star Trek. The greatest Trek.
It was a great short episode. Very cool that a friend of the podcast, Aaron Waltke, snuck a little reference to our show into this episode of Very Short Treks.
How do you think he did that?
Well, Aaron texted us about a tweet from back in the day. Greatest Trek had a tweet that said, "It's holograms all the way down when Dal makes a Star Trek Timelines crew for the Kobayashi Maru and Captain Chakotay is found in Hollow Janeway's repressed memories." This was a tweet that we did about Star Trek Prodigy when we were reviewing new episodes of season one of that show. It stuck in his mind. He says, "I'm 90% sure this tweet stuck in my brain and inspired the title for my Very Short Trek."
That is amazing. We made it, Ben. This is as good as it's going to get for us.
Yeah, this is the peak.
Confirmed inclusion in the Star Trek universe on YouTube as a Very Short Treks title. I'm really psyched about that. Thanks to Aaron Waltke for using us as inspiration.
What an honor.
I like the episode too. It made me think of that psychological experiment though. Like, what if all of this is a simulation?
Yeah.
You ever take that philosophy class? Really kind of broke my brain.
Yeah.
I think about it all the time.
I audited the class. I didn't actually take it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at no point in that class was there ever the argument from the try-hard student that was like, yeah, but what if this is a simulation inside a simulation? I'm going to take my answer over in the hub.
Get a light.
And the teacher's just like, "I don't know. You say computer and program twice."
Yeah. We may never know if this is a simulation.
Yeah. Adam, did you have an Edward Larkin in this Very Short Trek?
Edward Larkin. Look, for lack of having a nomination that's definitive in any way, I mean, Neelix is always a safe choice. So I'm going to make mine Neelix for that reason, that very flimsy reason. What about you?
I think I'm going to join you on the Neelix square. I was tempted to give it to the five-headed, multi-ranked Star Trek person standing next to Neelix's bed, but It was such a delight to see Neelix's shining face. So fun to go back to Voyager.
Yeah.
I think you're right about this one.
It's clear in this short treks that Neelix sleeps right next to the window.
Yeah.
Is that something that you could do were you to live on Voyager?
I feel like it's bad feng shui starship-wise.
Sometimes you don't have any choice where you live, like where the head of the bed is going to be.
I guess so.
But I've never had head of the bed next to a window.
Yeah, I think that mainly the reason I'm saying that is that Captain Picard's bed is orthogonal to the window.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's better than what Neelix has here. Like, I feel like having the window behind you is good. Having the window alongside you feels weird and bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be unusual.
Yeah. I guess that's kind of how it is in my bedroom, though. I don't know. My house is bad, though. Nobody should base their room design on my house.
We're here at Benjamin R. Harrison's house for our latest season. We've got a very upset wife who refuses to be on camera, so what we've got here is just Ben.
Yeah, I sent the application in without asking, and she's pretty mad at me. We'll see if the marriage lasts throughout the season. What we've got here is a very old house built in 1924, and they didn't bring their best in 1924 when they put this one up.
So this is pretty clearly a teardown, then?
I found a hole in my wall yesterday.
You've just been walking around your house not recognizing a hole in your wall? Where was the hole?
Or,
was it like leading to your neighbor's house?
No, there was like a lamp not going on, and I pulled the couch back from the wall to like get a look at the outlet that the lamp was supposed to be plugged into. And there was one of those, in-wall power strips where it's like you plug it in and you get three plugs on one side and three plugs on the other side.
Yeah,
so
I love
those. You can plug a lot of things in.
Uh-huh.
So I guess one of those had something plugged into it at some point that isn't plugged into it anymore that was a little wide of either side of the wall wart. And somebody had like, this is all supposition, but I think somebody like sat down on the couch and pushed it back in, and the wall was so fragile that it just punched a hole right through the plaster.
Oh man.
And I didn't know about it until last night. So now I got to go down to the home center and get a drywall patch repair kit.
Oh, those are fun.
Yeah.
So much fun to use those.
We need to score a lot of lap fast.
Licensed businessman.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
I am too old for your bullshit.
Young minds, fresh ideas. We don't.
Last very short treks here, Ben. It's called Walk, Don't Run, written by Casper Kelly, directed by Aaron Hawkins. This begins in a very unusual way, and in a way that really tells the viewer what this has all been about. This has been a celebration of the animated series, in case you've forgotten. And Tendi is sort of the host of this celebration, doing her take straight to camera. She's self-aware enough to know of her place in a television show. And that's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, who knows if that's true of her on Lower Decks or what.
This is also a callback to the very first episode, right? Where something innocent is taken as an insult.
Yeah.
Because she's trying to be very praiseworthy of the animated series and its characters, but it is taken very poorly.
They do not like being told that they were the ones that walked, so she and the Lower Deckers could run. We've got Scotty, the three-armed, three-legged alien guy.
I'm great at running.
And the cat lady, taking great umbrage with Tendi. What's her name? Mres?
Mres.
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 What are you trying to say?
Oh, man. Carlos Alazraki played Scotty and did a great job with the voice.
Our show invented the holodeck, lassie.
I love that guy.
I don't know who that is.
He was one of the guys on Reno 911. You would definitely recognize him. Very talented comedic performer.
All right. There are a lot of flashbacks in this very short Trex, using already existing footage from Lower Decks especially, with a special emphasis on the orgy scene. And this really sets off the animated series characters.
I got your orgy scene right here.
It was just a short.
What it sets off is sort of the beginning of an orgy of their own.
I don't know if you watch this like directly on the browser version of YouTube, but they have that thing where there's like a little graph that shows like where people watched the episode the most or where they clicked the most. And that orgy scene had a big old spike on the player.
That's funny.
When I watched this, I thought it was great.
I've watched this so many times that I think there's also a little spike during the scene where Umres takes off her bra.
Oh, yeah. That's don't shoot a black light at that spike. You don't want to be horrified by what Adam has done.
This isn't the entire descent that this episode takes. It goes even further when things devolve into a musical number that features Riker on trombone and Sulu on both washboard and keyboard.
Hit it, Scotty!
Yeah. Kind of a rockin' band. Well, I didn't write down what the genre of music they called it was.
Oh, you're talking about post-mainframe acid Cardassian 10 forward core?
Oh, yeah, that was what it was.
Yeah. Pretty solid as a line. As a genre of music, though, is this song good?
It's fine.
Here's what I'll say. This is the longest very short treks, and that's because the song is very long.
Yeah.
And for a comedy genre that uses the edit so deftly for comedy, I kept waiting for the edit to come. And I think that's probably on me as a viewer, right? Like, I was like, where would you stop this for comedy? And it made me stop concentrating on the lyrics or what's going on in frame.
Yeah.
And I think I ruined it for myself, is what I'm saying.
It is weird and wild musical number done with all of the sincerity of weird and wild musical number. It is not a bit. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not a hard edit.
I wonder to what extent, like, binge watching all of these made me do that to myself. Like, if you just watch this in isolation the week it came out, maybe its sincerity hits differently than, like, at the end of a 20-minute binge session where everything has just crushed.
Yeah. I mean, it's also just kind of an excuse to show a whole bunch of clips from Star Trek the Animated Series and, to a lesser extent, Lower Decks.
Yeah.
And it, I think, is just meant as kind of a love letter to animation and Star Trek. And in that way, like, the sincerity works for me, you know? But, yeah, I was like, before we recorded, I was like, I feel like the last one is the one I have the least to say about because I just, there's not much to it.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah, but there was never any stated promise of comedy as a genre. The only promise was the style of the animated series, which in itself was not a comedy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was sincere.
And like, weirdly dark and serious for being a Saturday morning cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Darker and more serious in a lot of ways than Star Trek, the original series, live action.
Right.
This one ends a lot like the first one ends, with Klingon D7's probably destroying the ship. I mean, mm-hmm. It seems like the ship is getting destroyed. We don't see a definitive, like, cut to the wide shot destruction of the ship the way we saw in episode one of Very Short Treks. But there's an explosion happening on the bridge, and I think we can do the math. But did you like this episode?
She'll always bring it home.
I liked Noelle Wells' singing voice. Like, she really brought it.
Yeah.
In the harmonizing at the end. I thought she really sounded great.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
I liked it the least for its comedy, but that's because I don't believe it set out to do that. I would say my favorite part was Imres.
Yeah, getting the bra off was pretty exciting.
Yeah, she's my favorite. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this probably does succeed at what it set out to achieve. And so for that reason, like, I have a hard time knocking it. But yeah, again, like, less to my taste than the other ones in the, I like the booger one, you know, like, that's to my taste.
That is a sentence construction I did not enjoy. How about an Edward Larkin for this one, Ben?
I got to give it to Mres because I was shocked to see only two cups on that bra.
Yeah. I'm going to give mine to Sulu because he takes his shirt off at the end. That seems unnecessary, but it's fun.
It is nice.
Because look at these abs.
Guy's rocking bod.
I would say, just in summation, like, if you were to ask me, did I like this entire series? Absolutely. I think it's really worth watching. And it's really a fast watch if you were to sit down and take it all in for like the 18 minutes that I think its collected runtime becomes.
Yeah.
Really quick, really funny. The art style is great. A great celebration of the animated series. A series of Star Trek that you and I have talked about on occasion, mostly in the bonus feed of this very show. But
yeah,
I thought it was great. I think, like, the ultimate review is, would I want to see more of this? And I absolutely do. Like, 1,000% I want to see more of this.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like it's worth doing, and I hope they feel that this was a successful experiment. I mean, the amount of likes and thumb ups that it got is a little bit worrying to me that it might not get another crack. But I'm glad it happened at the very least.
Yeah, thanks to everyone who put in the work to make this happen. Like, we love fun little projects like that.
Yeah.
And I think one reason we do is that this was a fun little project a long time ago, and look at what it became.
A chain around our necks. Well, Adam, do you want to see if we have anything in the Priority One inbox for this episode of Greatest Trek?
Much like the Very Short Treks, I really like the Priority One messages, and I hope they keep making them.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Our first Priority One message today is of a promotional nature, and it goes like this. I'm a teacher at Battle Creek, a Title I school in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm trying to take as many of our 200 eighth graders to Washington, D.C. as I can. But Big St. Paul isn't letting us fundraise during school hours. Our educational tour company is charging $2,000 per student, which is prohibitive for most of our families. The kids are looking at this opportunity the way Chakotay looks at Janeway. So I can't even guess at how many snapped pencils currently litter the floor of my classroom. Donate at bit.ly slash Battle Creek Trip. That's BATTLECRECKTRIP. That's bit.ly/Battle Creek Trip. I really hope folks donate, and I also really hope that at some point in the future, our education system just has enough money for awesome stuff like this.
It took growing up to realize how many other kids had opportunities like this. I went to schools that never had field trips like this at all. Like Minneapolis to Washington, D.C., that's intense. That's a big trip for a kid. And I never got to take field trips across state lines. Like it was a trip to the zoo or something. That was as good as we could get. And I always had a blast on those. But I think it's great that teachers try to make these opportunities available to their students. And I hope in this case, this is something that isn't a no forever. And maybe with a little help, we can turn that no into a yes.
I sure hope so. Let's get some kids to DC.
Ben, our second priority one message is from Captain Liz Soto.
Hi, Captain Liz Soto.
It is to the Dith BNA.
Anybody!
Their message goes like this. I've arrived in a strange experimental prototype community of tomorrow, where Mark Twain has come to me in a fever dream of tequila.
Oh, no.
Don't stop believing, he drawls. I wonder, what is it that I couldn't stop believing? Is it the dream of the Coconono? The hoof? Or perhaps the rope master? The world may never know.
Oh, boy.
Fun to think about.
Yeah. Sounds like Captain Liz Soto is having a great Epcot party.
You know, just hearing the word rope master made me think about STLV and how I pine for those days once again. Can't wait to go back.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to that for sure. Thanks to everyone who got a Priority One message on today's episode. If you'd like to do something for a good cause, like raise money to get a bunch of kiddos to DC, or just, you know, drunk text your friend over the internet, you can head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron to make that happen.
One last thing before we go. We're getting a message from a warning boy, Ben.
Oh, yeah. So this is the segment at the end of every episode of our show in which we shout out folks that are saying nice things about us online. Spreading the good word about the program really helps.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy.
A warning buoy.
This one is from Friends of DeSoto.social, the Mastodon community that Friends of DeSoto made themselves and is a great place to hang out if you are looking for a social network about a thing you actually care about. And you can also federate with other Mastodon instances and do normal other social network stuff. But a great starting point and a super nice and helpful community. Enton Wes Sacker sent a message to @GreatestTrek on there and said, when are we getting Greatest Rescue, a Bar Rescue rewatch podcast? Even in the Max Fun bonus feed, I need more Taffer impressions and this old Enterprise. Also, love Santa Monica Mountains and Factory Seconds.
I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, we should do that.
Put it in the mix.
We're always trying to think of fun things to mix in with our bonus episode content. Some of them are regular things like Santa Monica Mountains when we review old episodes of Baywatch and Factory Seconds when Adam and I go have lunch at the Cheesecake Factory and then talk about all the crap we ate. I think that I always like kind of wonder like if those are an enticement at all, because I don't think that not having heard them, a lot of Friends of DeSoto would necessarily think like, oh yeah, that sounds like something I'd be interested in. But basically everybody we hear from that already has the bonus feed because they support the shows, like to universal acclaim, these episodes are received, I would say.
Well, what it tells me is the truth that we've always known, which is the hang is the thing.
Yeah.
It's about making jokes about a weird thing, no matter what that weird thing is.
Yeah, and we have a lot of fun doing it. So I sure hope that people will give those a listen, and maybe we'll have a greatest rescue episode in there sometime soon.
Looking forward to that. Lord knows there's enough material there. Yeah. How many episodes per season? That's another like 30 episode season type of show.
Yeah, there's so much about that show that is absolute madness.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, thanks to everyone for keeping with us during the off season. We got a great big episode of this show coming up in a couple of weeks, our 250th episode. And Wendy Pretty will tell you a little bit more about it in the credits.
Amazing. 250.
Yeah. Take it from here, Wendy.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. In 2 weeks, Ben and Adam will be back with the 2023 Larkin Awards show for all of the new Trek that came out this year, and you are definitely not going to want to miss that. At the end of each episode, we want to thank all the great people who help make this show possible, especially the Max Fun members who support on a monthly basis. Members get access to the entire catalog of Max Fun bonus content, plus the new bonus episodes that are coming out monthly. You can set up a membership at MaximumFun.org/join, and we really appreciate it. Thanks to Adam Ragusea, who composed all of the original music for this show. You can find his YouTube cooking channel and podcast by searching for Adam Ragusea. Thanks to Nick Ditmore for creating the show art, and thanks to Bill Tilley for managing all of the @GreatestTrek social media pages. Make sure you follow one of those and use the #GreatestTrek to connect with other friends of DeSoto online. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks on Greatest Trek.
Three, two, one.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported
directly
by you.